something he taught us. But he also felt responsible for Scotty's death. A lot of people blamed him, and they always will. That's some serious baggage, man. You like the coffee? Very strong. You miss him, Nat? Another slow sip. How can you not miss Rake once you've played for him? I see his face every day. I hear his voice. I can smell him sweating. I can feel him hitting me with no pads on. I can imitate his growl, his grumbling, his bitching. I remember his stories, his speeches, his lessons. I remember all 40 plays and all 38 games when I wore the jersey. My father died 4 years ago, and I loved him dearly, but, and this is hard to say, he had less influence on me than Eddie Rake. Nat paused in mid-thought just long enough to pour more coffee. Later, when I opened this place and got to know him as something other than a legend, when I wasn't worried about getting screamed at for screwing up, I grew to adore the old fart. Eddie Rake's not a sweet man, but he is human. He suffered greatly after Scotty's death, and he had no one to turn to. He prayed a lot, went to Mass every morning. I think fiction helped him. It was a new world. He got lost in books, hundreds of them, maybe thousands. A quick sip. I miss him sitting over there, talking about books and authors, so he wouldn't have to talk about football. The bell on the front door rattled softly in the distance. Nat shrugged it off and said, "They'll find us. You want a muffin or something?" "Nah, I ate Renfro's. Everything's the same there. Same grease, same menu, same flies. Yeah, and same Bubba's sitting around bitching because the team ain't undefeated." "Yep. You go to the games, Nat?" "Nah. When you're the only openly gay dude in a town like this, you don't enjoy crowds. People stare and point and whisper and grab their children. And while I'm used to it, I'd rather avoid the scene. And I'd rather go alone, which is no fun, or take a date, which would stop the game. Can you imagine me walking in with some cute boy holding hands? They'd stone us. How'd you manage to come out of the closet in this town?" Nat put the coffee down and thrust his hands deep into the pockets of his highly starched and pressed jeans. "Not here, man. After we graduated, I sort of migrated to D.C., where it didn't take me long to figure out who I am and what I am. I didn't sneak out of the closet, Neely. I kicked the damn door down. I got a job in a bookstore and learned the business. I lived the wild life for 5 years, had a ball. But then I got tired of the city. Frankly, I got homesick. My dad's health was declining, and I needed to come home. I had a long talk with Rake. I told him the truth. Eddie Rake was the first person here I confided in." "What was his reaction?" "Yeah, he said he didn't know much about gay people, but if I knew who I was, then to hell with everybody else. 'Go live your life, son,' he said. 'Some folks will hate you, some folks will love you. Most folks haven't made up their minds. It's up to you.' That sounds like Rake. He gave me the courage, Neely. Then he convinced me to open this place. And when I was sure I made a huge blunder, Rake started hanging around here and the word spread." "Just a second. Don't leave." Nat loped away toward the front where an old lady was waiting. He called her by name, in a voice that couldn't have been sweeter, and soon they were lost in a search for a book. Neely walked around the counter and poured himself another cup of the brew. When Nat returned, he said, "That's Mrs. Underwood. Used to run the cleaners. I remember her. 110 years old, and she likes erotic westerns. Go figure. You learn all sorts of good stuff when you run a bookshop. She figures she can buy from me because I have secrets of my own. Plus, at 110, she probably doesn't give a damn anymore." Nat put a massive blueberry muffin on a plate and laid it on the counter. "Dig in," he said. "Break it in half." Neely picked up a small piece. "You bake this stuff?" Neely asked. "Every morning. I buy it frozen, bake it in the oven. Nobody knows the difference." "Not bad. You ever see Cameron?" Nat stopped chewing and gave Neely a quizzical look. "Why should you be curious about Cameron?" "You guys are friends. Just wondering." "I hope your conscience still bothers you, Neely." "It does." "Good. I hope it's painful." "Maybe, sometimes." "We write letters. She's fine. Living in Chicago. Married. Two little girls." "Again, why do you ask?" "I can't ask about one of our classmates." "There were almost 200 in our class. Why is she the first one you've asked about?" "Please forgive me. No, I want to know. Come on, Neely. Why ask about Cameron?" Neely put a few crumbs of the muffin in his mouth and waited. He shrugged and smiled and said, "Okay, I'll think about her." "Do you think about Screamer?" "How could I forget Screamer? You went with the bimbo. Instant gratification. But in the long run, it was a bad choice." "So I was young and stupid, I admit. Sure was fun, though." "You were the All-American, Neely. You had your pick of any girl in the school. You dumped Cameron because Screamer was hot to trot. I hated you for it." "Come on, Nat, really? I hated your guts. Cameron was a close friend from kindergarten before you came to town. She knew I was different. She always protected me. I tried to protect her. But she fell for you, and that was a huge mistake. Screamer decided she wanted the All-American. Skirts got shorter, blouses tighter, and you were toast. My beloved Cameron got thrown aside." "Sorry I brought this up. Yeah, man, let's talk about something else." For a long, quiet moment, there was nothing to talk about. "Where do you see her?" Nat said. "Pretty good, huh? Screamer looks like an aging, high-dollar call girl, which she probably is. Cameron is nothing but class." "You think she'll be here?" "Probably. Miss Lyler taught her piano forever." Neely had nowhere to go, but he glanced at his watch anyway. "Gotta run, Nat. Thanks for the coffee." "Thanks for coming by, Neely. A real treat." They zigzagged through the racks and shelves toward the front of the store. Neely stopped at the door. "Look, Nat, some of us are gathering in the bleachers tonight, sort of a vigil, I guess," he said. "Beer and war stories. Why don't you stop by?" "I'd like that," Nat said. "Thanks." Neely opened the door and started out. Nat grabbed his arm and said, "Neely." "I lied. I never hated you." "You should have. Nobody hated you, Neely. You were our All-American." "Those days are over, Nat." "No, not till Rake dies." "Tell Cameron I'd like to see her. I have something to say." The secretary smiled efficiently and slid a clipboard across the counter. Neely printed his name, the time, and the date, and put down that he was visiting Bing Albritton, the longtime girls' basketball coach. The secretary examined the form, did not recognize either his face or his name, and finally said, "He's probably in the gym." The other lady in the administration office glanced up, and she, too, failed to recognize Neely Crenshaw. And that was fine with him. The halls of Messina High School were quiet. The classroom doors were all closed. Same lockers, same paint color, same floors hardened and shiny with layers of wax, same sticky odor of disinfectant near the restrooms. If he stepped into one, he knew he would hear the same water dripping, smell the same smoke of a forbidden cigarette, see the same row of stained urinals, probably see the same fight between two punks. He kept to the hallways, where he passed Miss Arnett's algebra class, and with a quick glance through the narrow window in the door, he caught a glimpse of his former teacher, certainly 15 years older, sitting on the corner of the same desk, teaching the same formulas. Had it really been 15 years? For a moment he felt 18 again, just a kid who hated algebra and hated English and needed nothing those classrooms had to offer, because he would make his fortune on the football field. The rush and flurry of 15 years passing made him dizzy for a second. A janitor passed, an ancient gentleman who had been cleaning the building since it was built. For a split second, he seemed to recognize Neely. Then he looked away and grunted a soft, "Morning." The main entrance of the school opened into a large, modern atrium that had been built when Neely was a sophomore. The atrium connected the two older buildings that comprised the high school and led to the entrance of the gymnasium. The walls were lined with senior class pictures dating back to the 1920s. Basketball was a second-level sport at Messina, but because of football, the town had grown so accustomed to winning that it expected a dynasty from every team. In the late 70s, Rake had proclaimed that the school needed a new gym. A bond issue passed by 90%, and Messina had proudly built the finest high school basketball arena in the state. Its entrance was nothing but a hall of fame. The centerpiece was a massive and very expensive trophy case in which Rake had carefully arranged his 13 little monuments, 13 state titles, from 1961 to 1987. Behind each was a large team photo with the list of the scores and headlines blown up and mounted in a collage. There were signed footballs and retired jerseys, including number 19. And there were lots of pictures of Rake, Rake with Johnny Unitas at some off-season function, Rake with a governor here and a governor there, Rake with Roman Armstead just after a Packers game. For a few minutes, Neely was lost in the exhibit, though he'd seen it many times. It was at once a glorious tribute to a brilliant coach and his dedicated players, and a sad reminder of what used to be. He once heard someone say that the lobby of the gym was the heart and soul of Messina. It was more of a shrine to Eddie Rake, an altar where his followers could worship. Other display cases ran along the walls leading to the doors of the gym. More signed footballs from less successful years. Smaller trophies from less important teams. For the first time, and hopefully the last, Neely felt a twinge of regret for those Messina kids who had trained and succeeded and gone unnoticed because they played a lesser sport. Football was king, and that would never change. It brought the glory and paid the bills, and that was that. A loud bell, one that sounded so familiar, erupted nearby and jolted Neely back to the reality that he was trespassing 15 years after his time. He headed back through the atrium, only to be engulfed in the fury and throng of a late-morning class change. The halls were alive with students pushing, yelling, slamming lockers, releasing the hormones and testosterone that had just been suppressed for the past 50 minutes. No one recognized Neely. A large, muscled player with a very thick neck almost bumped into him. He wore a green and white Spartan letterman's jacket, a status symbol with no equal in Messina. He had the customary strut of someone who owned the hall, which he did, if only briefly. He commanded respect. He expected to be admired. The girls smiled at him. The other boys gave him room. "Come back in a few years, big boy, and they will not know your name," Neely thought. "Your fabulous career will be a footnote. All the cute little girls will be mothers. The green jacket will still be a source of great personal pride, but you won't be able to wear it. High school stuff. Kid stuff." Why was it so important back then? Neely suddenly felt very old. He ducked through the crowd and left the school. Late in the afternoon, he drove slowly along a narrow gravel road that wrapped around Carr's Hill. When the shoulder widened, he pulled over and parked. Below him, an eighth of a mile away, was the Spartan fieldhouse, and in the distance to his right were the two practice fields, where the varsity was hitting in full pads on one, while the JV ran drills on the other. Coaches whistled and barked. On Rake Field, Rabbit rode a green and yellow John Deere mower back and forth across the pristine grass, something he did every day from March until December. The cheerleaders were on the track behind the home bench, painting signs for the war on Friday night, and occasionally practicing some new maneuvers. In the far end zone, the band was assembling itself for a quick rehearsal. Little had changed. Different coaches, different players, different cheerleaders, different kids in the band. But it was still the Spartans at Rakefield, with Rabbit on the mower, and everybody nervous about Friday. If Neely came back in 10 years and witnessed the same scene, he knew that the people in the place would look the same. Another year, another team, another season. It was hard to believe that Eddie Rake had been reduced to sitting very near where Neely was now sitting, and watching the game from so far away that he needed a radio to know what was happening. Did he cheer for the Spartans? Or did he secretly hope they lost every game, just for spite? Rake had a mean streak and could carry a grudge for years. Neely had never lost here. His freshman team went undefeated, which was, of course, expected in Messina. The freshmen played on Thursday nights and drew more fans than most varsities. The two games he lost as a starter were both in the state finals, both on the campus at A&M. His eighth grade team had tied Porterville at home, and that was as close as Neely had come to losing a football game in Messina. The tie had prompted Coach Rake to charge into their dressing room and deliver a harsh post-game lecture on the meaning of Spartan pride. After he terrorized a bunch of 13-year-olds, he replaced their coach. The stories kept coming back as Neely watched the practice field, having no desire to relive them. He left. A man delivering a fruit basket to the Rake home heard the whispers, and before long the entire town knew that the coach had drifted so far away he would never return. At dusk, the gossip reached the bleachers, where small groups of players from different teams in different decades had gathered to wait. A few sat alone, deep in their own memories of Rake and glory that had vanished so long ago. Paul Curry was back in jeans and a sweatshirt, and with two large pizzas Mona had made and sent so the boys could be boys for the night. Silo Mooney was there with a cooler of beer. Hubcap was missing, which was never a surprise. The Utley twins from out in the county had heard that Neely was back. 15 years earlier they had been identical 160-pound linebackers, each of whom could tackle an oak tree. When it was dark, they watched as Rabbit made his trek to the scoreboard and flipped on the lights on the southwest pole. Rake was still alive, though barely. Long shadows fell across Rake Field, and the former players waited. The joggers were gone. The place was still. Laughter rose occasionally from one of the groups scattered throughout the home bleachers, as someone told an old football story. But for the most part, the voices were low. Rake was unconscious now. The end was near. Nat Sawyer found them. He had something in a large carrying case. "You got drugs there, Nat?" Silo asked. "Nope, cigars." Silo was the first to light up a Cuban, then Nat, then Paul, and finally Neely. The Utley twins neither drank nor smoked. "You'll never guess what I found," Nat said. "A girlfriend," Silo said. "Shut up, Silo." Nat opened the case and removed a large cassette tape player, a boombox. "Great, some jazz, just what I wanted," Silo said. Nat held up a cassette tape and announced, "This is Buck Coffey doing the 87 championship game." "No way," Paul said. "Yep, I listened to it last night, first time in years." "I've never heard it," Paul said. "I didn't know they recorded the game," Silo said. "A lot of things you don't know, Silo," Nat said. He put the tape in the slot and began fiddling with the dials. "If it's okay with you guys, I thought we'd just skip the first half." Even Neely managed to laugh. He had thrown 4 interceptions and fumbled once in the first half. The Spartans were down 31-0 to a wonderfully gifted team from East Pike. The tape began and the slow, raspy voice of Buck Coffey cut through the stillness of the bleachers.
Buck Coffey here at halftime, folks, on the campus of A&M in what was supposed to be an evenly matched game between two unbeaten teams. Not so. East Pike leads in every category except penalties and turnovers. The score's 31-0. I've been calling Messina Spartan games for the past 22 years, and I cannot remember being this far behind at halftime.
"Where is Buck now?" Neely asked. "He quit when they sacked Rake," Paul said. Nat turned up the volume slightly, and Buck's voice carried even farther. It acted as a magnet for the other players from the other teams. Randy Yeager and two of his teammates from 1992 came over. John Couch, the lawyer, and Blanchard Teague, the optometrist, were back in their jogging shoes, with 4 others from the era of the streak. 12 more moved close by.
The teams are back on the field, and we'll pause for a word from our sponsors.
"I cut out all that crap from the sponsors," Nat said. "Good," said Paul. "You're such a smart boy," Silo said.
"I'm looking at the Messina sideline, and I don't see Coach Rake. In fact, none of the coaches are on the field. The teams are lining up for the second half kickoff, and the Spartan coaches are nowhere to be seen. This is very strange, to say the least."
"Where were the coaches?" someone asked. Silo shrugged but didn't answer. And that was the great question that had been asked and left unanswered for 15 years in Messina. It had been obvious that the coaches boycotted the second half, but why?
East Pike is kicking to the south end zone. Here's the kick. It's short, taken by Marcus Mabry on the 18, zigs one way, back the other, cuts upfield, has some room, and is tackled at the 30-yard line, where the Spartans will attempt to generate some offense for the first time tonight. Neely Crenshaw was just 3 for 15 in the first half. East Pike caught more of his passes than the Spartans did.
"Asshole," someone said. "I thought he was on our side." "Always, but he liked us better when we were winning." "Just wait," Nat said.
Still no sign of Eddie Rake or the other coaches. This is very bizarre. Spartans break huddle, and Crenshaw sets his offense. Curry, wide right. Mabry's the eye back. East Pike has 8 men in the box, just daring Crenshaw to throw the ball. Here's the snap. Option right. Crenshaw fakes the pitch. Cuts upfield, sees some daylight, hit hard, spins, breaks a tackle, and he's loose at the 40, the 45, the 50, and out of bounds at the East Pike 41. A pickup of 29 yards. The best play of the game for the Spartan offense. Maybe they're coming to life.
Man, those guys hit, Silo said quietly. They had 5 Division I signees, Paul said, reliving the nightmare of the first half. 4 on defense. You don't have to remind me, Neely said.
This Spartan team is finally awake. You're yelling at each other as they huddle, and the sideline is really fired up now. Here they come. Crenshaw points to his left, and Curry spreads wide. Mabry in the slot. Now in motion. The snap, quick pitch to Mabry, who scoots around left end for 6, maybe 7 yards. And the Spartans are really wired now. They're yanking each other off the turf, slapping each other on the helmets. And, of course, Silo Mooney's joined with at least 3 of the East Pike players. Always a good sign.
What were you saying, Silo? I was telling them that they were about to get their asses kicked. Yeah, but you were down 31 points. Yep, Paul said it's true. We heard him. After that second play, Silo started trash-talking.
2nd and 3. Crenshaw's in the shotgun. The snap, a quick draw to Mabry, who's hit hard, spins, turns upfield to the 30, the 20, and out of bounds at the East Pike, 16. 3 plays, 54 yards, and the Spartan offensive line is really moving people off the ball. 1st down, Spartans. In the first half, they had only 5 and only 46 yards rushing. Crenshaw's calling his own plays now, nothing from the sidelines because there are no coaches over there. Slot left with Curry wide, Mabry in the eye, Chenault in motion. Option right, the fake, the pitch to Mabry, who's hit at the line, runs over the linebacker and slams down to the 10-yard line. Clock is ticking, 10:05 left in the 3rd quarter. Messina's 10 yards from a touchdown and 1,000 miles from a state title. 1st and goal, Crenshaw drops back to pass. A draw to Mabry, who's hit in the backfield. Shakes loose, scoots wide to the right. There's nobody there. He's going to score. He's going to score. And Marcus Mabry dives in for the 1st Messina touchdown. Touchdown, Spartans. The comeback has begun.
John Couch said, "When we scored, I remember thinking, nice to have a touchdown, but there's no way we can come back on these guys. East Pike was too good." Nat turned down the volume and said, "They fumbled the kickoff, didn't they?" Donnie, "Yep. Hindu stripped the ball on about the 15. We were swarming like hornets. It bounced around for about 5 minutes and finally rolled out of bounds at the 20. Ronnie, "They ran the tailback off tackle, right? No gain. Off tackle left, no gain. 3rd and 11, they dropped back to pass, and Silo sacked the quarterback on the 6-yard line. Donnie, unfortunately, in doing so, he stuffed him into the ground head first. 15 yards, unsportsmanlike conduct. 1st down, East Pike." Silo, "It was a bad call." Paul, "Bad call. You tried to break his neck." Silo, "No, dear banker, I tried to kill him." Ronnie, "We were out of our minds." Silo was growling like a wounded grizzly bear. Hindu, I swear, was crying. He wanted to blitz from safety on every play just so he could be sure he hit someone. Donnie, "We could have stopped the Dallas Cowboys." Blanchard, "Who was calling the defense?" Silo, "Me, it was simple. Man coverage on the wideouts, knock down the tight end, 8 guys in the box, everyone blitz, everyone hit somebody, clean or not, didn't matter. It wasn't a game anymore, it was a war." Donnie, "On 3rd and 8, Hickens, that cocky flanker who went to Clemson, cut across the middle on a slant. The pass was high. Hindu read it perfectly, came across like a bullet train, and hit him a split second before the ball got there. Pass interference." Hall, "His helmet went 20 feet in the air." John Couch, "We were 40 rows up. It sounded like 2 cars hitting." Silo, "We celebrated. We'd kill one of them. Got a flag for that, too." Ronnie, "2 flags, 30 yards. We didn't care. They weren't going to score. Didn't matter where they put the ball." Blanchard, "You guys were convinced they couldn't score?" Silo, No team could have scored on us in the second half. When they finally carried Higgins off the field, on a stretcher I might add, the ball was on our 30-yard line. They ran a sweep, lost 6 yards. A draw, lost 4. Then the little quarterback went to the shotgun again, and we just mauled him. Nat, their punter dropped one on the 3-yard line. Silo, yes, they had a good punter. We, of course, had you. Nat turned up the volume.
97 yards to go for the Spartans. Just under 8 minutes left in the third quarter. Still no sign of Eddie Rake or any of the Spartan coaches. I watched Crenshaw when East Pike had the ball. He kept his right hand in a bucket of ice the entire time and kept his helmet on. Hand off left side to Mabry, who doesn't get much. Both defenses are simply sending everybody, which should set up the pass.
Silo, not from the 3-yard line, dumbass. Paul, Coffee always wanted to coach.
Pitch right side. Mabry bobbles the ball, then cuts up fields, got some room wide, and he's out of bounds along the 10.
John Couch, just curious, Neely, do you know what you call next? Neely, sure, option right. I read the option, fake to Chenault, fake to pitch to Hubcap, cut up field for 11 yards. The offensive line was chopping people down.
First and 10, Spartans. We break huddle and sprint to the line of scrimmage. This is a different team, folks.
Paul, I don't know why Buck was on the radio. Nobody was listening. The entire town was at the game. Randy, no, you're wrong. Everybody was listening. In the second half, we were trying to find out what happened to Coach Rake. So all the Messina fans had their radios stuck to their heads.
Hand off to Chenault, who plows straight ahead for 3 or 4. He's basically just lowered his helmet and followed Silo Mooney, who's being double-teamed.
Silo, just 2? I was insulted. The second guy was this little nasty-faced bastard, weighed about 180 or so, thought he was bad, came in the game trash-talking. He'll leave the field in just a minute.
Pitch to Mabry, wide right again. He's got some room. He's up to the 30 and out of bounds. An East Pike youngster shaken up on the field.
Silo, that's him. Blanchard, what'd you do? Silo, the play swept right, away from us. I chop-blocked him, got him on the ground, then dropped the knee in his stomach. Squeal like a pig. He lasted for 3 plays, never came back. Paul, they could have flagged us for unnecessary roughness on every play, offense or defense. Neely, while he dragged him off the field, Chenault tells me their left tackle's not moving too well. Got something wrong. Twisted ankle, maybe. The guy's in pain, but he won't leave the game. So we ran at him 5 straight times. Same play. 6-7 yards a pop, with Marcus low to the ground, just looking for somebody to run over. I'd hand the ball off and watch the carnage. Silo. Turn it up, Ned.
1st and 10 on the East Pike, 38. The Spartans are moving the ball, but they're sure eating up the clock. Not a single pass so far in the second half. 6 minutes to go. Curry in motion left, the snap, option right, the pitch to Mabry, who swings outside to the 30, the 25, all the way down to the East Pike 18, and the Spartans are knocking at the door.
Neely. After every play, Mabry sprinted back to the huddle and said, "Give me the ball, bro, just give me the ball." So he did. Paul. And after Neely called every play, Silo would say, "You fumble it and I'll break your neck." Silo, I wasn't kidding either. Blanchard. Were you guys aware of the clock? Neely, yeah, but it didn't matter. We knew we'd win.
Mabry's carried the ball 12 times already in the second half for 78 yards. Here's a quick snap. Right side again. Not much there. The Spartans are really hammering away at the left side of the East Pike defense. Mabry just follows Durston and Vetrano. And, of course, Silo Mooney's always around the pileup.
Silo, I love Buck Coffee. Neely, didn't you date his youngest daughter? Silo, I wouldn't call it dating. Buck damn sure didn't know anything about it.
2nd and 8 from the 16. Mabry again off the right side for 3, maybe 4. And it's a dogfight down there in the trenches, folks.
Silo, it's always a dogfight, Buck. That's why they call it the trenches. In the semi-darkness, the fraternity had quietly grown larger. Other players had eased over or slid down the bleachers, close enough to hear the play-by-play.
3rd and 4, Curry wide, full backfield, option right, Crenshaw keeps, his hit, falls forward for, maybe two. He really got nailed by Devon Bond.
Neely, Devon Bond hit me so many times I felt like a punching bag. Silo, he was the one player I couldn't do anything with. I'd fire off the ball, have a perfect shot at him, and he just vanished. That, or he'd hit me with a forearm that would rattle my teeth. He was one bad dude. Donnie, didn't he make a roster? Paul, yeah, Steelers for a couple years. Then some injuries sent him back to East Pike.
A fourth and two that is beyond huge, folks. Spartans must score here because they have a lot more scoring to do. And the clock is really moving now. 3 minutes and 40 seconds. Full house, now Chenault in motion left, long count by Crenshaw, and they jump. East Pike jumps offside. First and goal, Spartans on the 5-yard line. Crenshaw gave it the old head fake and got by with it.
Silo, head faked my ass. Paul, it was all in the cadence. Blanchard, I remember their coach going crazy, charging the field. Neely, he got a flag, half the distance. Silo, that guy was psycho, and the more we scored, the louder he screamed.
First and goal from the 2.5. Option left. Here comes the pitch. Marcus Mabry's hit. Drives and falls into the end zone. Touchdown, Spartans. Touchdown.
Buck's voice carried even farther through the still night. Rabbit, at some point, heard it and crept into the shadows down the track to investigate the noise. He saw a crowd sitting and lying haphazardly up in the bleachers. He saw the bottles of beer, smelled the smoke from the cigars. In another era, he would have taken charge and ordered everyone away from the field. But those were Rake's boys up there, the chosen few. They were waiting for the lights to go off. If he got closer, he could call each one by name and number, and he could remember the exact location of their lockers. Rabbit slipped through the metal braces under the bleachers and hid below the players, listening. Silo. Neely called for an onside kick and it almost worked. The ball bounced around and got touched by every damn player on the field until some guy with the wrong jersey finally found a handle. Ronnie. They ran twice for 2 yards, then tried a long pass that Hindu broke up. 3 and out. Except that Hindu leveled the receiver out of bounds. Unnecessary roughness. First down. Donnie. It was a horrible call. Blanchard. We went crazy up in the stands. Randy. My father almost threw his radio on the field. Silo. We didn't care. They weren't going to score. Ronnie. They went 3 and out again. John Couch. Wasn't the punt return somewhere around here? Nat. First play of the fourth quarter. He turned up the volume.
East Pike back to punt on the Messina 41. The snap, a low hard kick, taken on the bounce by Paul Curry at the 5. Wide to the right to the 10. Cuts back. He's got a wall, a perfect wall. To the 20, 30, 40. Cuts back across midfield. Picks up a block from Marcus Mabry to the 40, the 30, along the far sideline. He's got blockers everywhere. To the 10, 5, 4, 2, touchdown! Touchdown, Spartans! A 95-yard punt return.
Nat turned the volume down so they could savor one of the greatest moments in Spartan football history. The punt return had been executed with textbook precision, every block and every move choreographed by Eddie Rake during endless hours of practice. When Paul Curry danced into the end zone, he was escorted by 6 green jerseys, just the way they'd been drilled. "We all meet in the end zone," Rake had screamed over and over. 2 East Pike players were down, victims of vicious but legal blindside blocks that Rake had taught them in the 9th grade. "Punt returns are perfect for killing people," he had said, over and over. Paul, "Let's listen to it again." Silo, "Nah, once is enough. Same ending." After the field was cleared, East Pike took the following kickoff and began a drive that would consume 6 minutes. For one brief period in the second half, they used their superior talent to chew up 60 yards, though every inch was contested. Their seamless execution of the first half was long gone, replaced by stutter steps and uncertainty. The sky was falling. One massive choke was underway, and they were powerless to stop it. Every handoff drew a furious attack from all 11 defenders. Every short pass ended with the receiver crumpled on the ground. There was no time for long passes, Silo could not be contained. On 4th and 2 from the Messina 28, East Pike foolishly went for the first down. Their quarterback faked a pitch to the left, bootlegged to the right, looking for the tight end. The tight end, however, had been mauled at the line by Donnie Utley, whose twin was blitzing like a mad dog. Ronnie caught the quarterback from behind, stripped the ball like he'd been taught, flung him to the ground, and the Spartans, trailing 31-21, were in business with 5:35 to go in the game.
There's something wrong with Neely's right hand. Not a single pass attempted in the second half. When the defense is on the field, he keeps it buried in an ice bucket. East Pike has it figured out. They're in man coverage on the wideouts. Everybody else is packed along the line of scrimmage.
Yeager, it was broken, wasn't it? Paul, yes, it was broken. Neely just nodded. Yeager, how'd you break it, Neely? Silo, a locker room incident. Neely was silent.
1st and 10 from the Spartan 39. Curry, wide right, motion left, pitch right side to Marcus Mabry, who gets 4, maybe 5 very tough yards. Devon Bond is all over the field. Must be a linebacker's dream not worrying about pass coverage, just stalking the football. Spartans huddle quickly, sprint to the line. They can hear the clock. Quick snap, dive to Chenault, right behind Silo Mooney, who's just slaughtering people in the middle of the field.
Silo, I like that, slaughtering. Donnie Utley, that was putting it mildly. Frank missed a block on a sweep. Silo punched him in the huddle. Neely, he didn't punch him, he slapped him. The referee started to throw a flag, but he wasn't sure if you could be penalized for roughing up your own teammates. Silo, he shouldn't have missed the block.
3rd and 1 at the 48, 4:20 to go in the game. Spartans are back on the line before East Pike is set. Quick snap, Neely rolling right, a keeper, across the 50, to the 45, and out of bounds. 1st down and the clock will stop. The Spartans need 2 touchdowns. They'll have got to start using the sidelines.
Silo, go for it, Buck. Why don't you just call the plays? Donnie, I'm sure he knew them. Randy, hell, everybody knew them. They didn't change in over 30 years. John Couch, we ran the same plays you guys were running against East Pike.
Mabry off tackle again for 4 yards, hit hard by Devon Bond, and the safety Armando Butler, a real headhunter. They have no fear of the pass, so they're really loading up against the run. Double tight end set, Chenault in motion right, option left, pitch to Mabry, who spins forward, keeps chugging, somehow picks up 3. It'll be 3rd and 3 now, another big play, and they're all big now. Clock's counting, under 4 minutes to play. Ball at the 38. Curry sprints in the huddle, wide left, split backfield. Neely drops back into the shotgun. The snap, he rolls right, looking, there's pressure. And off he goes to the far side, and he's nailed by Devon Bond. A really nasty helmet-to-helmet collision. Neely is slow getting up.
Neely, I couldn't see. I've never been hit that hard, and for 30 seconds or so I couldn't see. Paul, we didn't want to waste a timeout, so we yanked him up, got him to his feet, sort of dragged him back to the huddle. Silo, I slapped him too, and that really helped. Neely, I don't remember that. Paul, it was 4th and 1. Neely was in la-la land, so I called the play. What can I say? I'm a genius.
4th and 1. Spartans are slow coming to the line. Crenshaw doesn't feel too well right now. Doesn't look too steady. Huge play. Huge play. This could be the ball game, folks. East Pike has 9 men on the line. Double tight ends. No wideouts. Crenshaw finds the center. Long snap. Quick pitch to Mabry, who stops, jumps, shovels a pass across the middle to Heath Dorchak, who's wide open. To the 30, the 20, hit at the 10, stumbles and falls down to the 3. 1st and goal, Spartans.
Paul, it was the ugliest pass ever thrown in organized football. End over end, a dying duck. Man, was it beautiful. Silo, gorgeous. Dorchak couldn't catch the flu. That's why Neely never threw to him. Nat, I've never seen anyone run so slow, just a big lumbering buffalo. Silo, he could outrun your ass. Neely, the play took forever, and when Heath came back to the huddle, he had tears in his eyes. Paul, I looked at Neely and he said, call a play. I remember looking at the clock, 3:40 to go, and we had to score twice. I said, "Let's do it now, not on third down." Silo said, "Run it up my back."
Only 3 yards from the promised land, folks, and here come the Spartans hustling to the line. Quick set, quick snap, Crenshaw and a keeper, and he walks into the end zone. Silo Mooney and Barry Vetrano bulldoze the entire center of the East Pike line. Touchdown, Spartans, they will not be denied. 31-27, unbelievable.
Blanchard, I remember you guys huddled together before we kicked off, the entire team. Almost got to delay a game. There was a long pause. Finally, Silo spoke. We were taking care of business, had some secrets to protect. John Couch, secrets about Rake? Silo, yep. Couch, doesn't he show up about now? Paul, we weren't watching, but at some point after we kicked off, word spread down the sideline that Rake was back. We spotted him at the edge of the end zone, just standing there with the other four coaches, still wearing their green sweatshirts, hands in pockets, watching nonchalantly as if they were the grounds crew or something. We hated the sight of them. Nat, it was us versus them. We didn't care about East Pike. Blanchard, I'll never forget that sight. Rake and his assistants at the edge of the field, looking like a bunch of whores in church. At the same time, we didn't know why they were over there. Still don't, I guess. Paul, they were told to stay away from our sideline. Blanchard, by whom? Paul, the team. Blanchard, but why? Nat reached for the volume. Buck Coffey's voice was beginning to crack as the excitement took its toll. To compensate for the fading strength and clarity, Buck was just getting louder. When East Pike walked to the line on first down, Buck was practically yelling into his microphone.
Ball on the 18, clock still at 3:25 to go. East Pike has a grand total of 3 first downs and 61 yards of offense in the second half. Everything they've tried has been stuffed down their throats by an inspired bunch of Spartans. A magnificent turnaround, the gutsiest performance I've seen in 22 years of calling Spartan football.
Silo, go for it, Buck.
And off right side for 1, maybe 2 yards. East Pike's not sure what to do right now. They'd love to burn some clock, but they need to get some first downs. 3:10, and the clock is running. Messina with all 3 timeouts left, and they're going to need them. East Pike really dragging now. Slow to the huddle, slow with the play from the sidelines. Play clock down to 12. They break huddle, slow to the line. 4, 3, 2, 1, the snap. Pitch right to Barnaby, who scoots around the corner for 5, maybe 6. A big third down now, 3rd and 3 on the 25, with the clock moving.
A car rolled to a stop near the gate. It was white with words painted on the doors. I guess Mal's back, someone said. The sheriff took his time getting out, stretched, surveyed the field and the stands. Then he lit a cigarette, the flicker of the lighter visible 30 rows up on the 40-yard line. Silo, should have brought more beer.
Spartans dig in. Wideouts right and left. In the shotgun, Waddell takes the snap. Fakes right, then throws left. Ball is caught at the 32 on a quick slant by Gaddy, who slammed down to the ground by Hindu Aiken. First down East Pike, and they're moving the chains. 2:40 to go. And the Spartans need somebody on the sideline to start making some decisions. They're playing without coaches down there, folks.
Blanchard, who was making decisions? Paul, after they got the first down, Neely and I decided we'd better burn a timeout. Silo, I took the defense to the sideline and the whole team gathered round. Everyone was screaming. I get goosebumps thinking about it now. Neely, volume, Nat, before Silo starts crying.
First down at the 32, East Pike breaks huddle. In no hurry. Split backfield, wide right, the snap, Waddell back to pass, looking right, and he connects on a down and out at the 38. The receiver did not go out of bounds, and the clock is moving at 2:28, 2:27.
From the gate, Mal Brown smoked a cigarette and studied the crowd of ex-Spartans sprawl loosely together in the center of the bleachers. He could hear the radio, and he recognized Buck Coffey's voice. but he could not tell what game they were listening to. He had a hunch, though. He puffed and looked for rabbits somewhere in the shadows.
East Pike at the line with a 2nd and 4. 2 minutes and 14 seconds to go in the game. Quick pitch left to Barnaby, and he cannot go. Hit hard at the line by both Utleys, Ronnie and Donnie, blitzing through every gap, it seems. They hit him first, and the entire team piled on. The Spartans are in a frenzy down there, but they'd better be careful. There was almost a late hit.
Silo, late hit, unnecessary roughness, half a dozen personal fouls. Take your pick, Buck. They could have flagged us on every play. Ronnie, Silo was biting people.
3rd and 4, under 2 minutes. East Pike stalling as much as they can as that clock ticks away. Back at the line, all 11 Spartans are waiting. Do you run and get stuffed, or do you pass and get sacked? That's the choice for East Pike. They cannot move the ball. Waddell is back, it's a screen, and the ball is knocked down by Donnie Utley. Clock stops, 4th and 4. East Pike will have to punt. 1 minute and 50 seconds to play, and the Spartans will get the ball.
Mal was walking slowly around the track with another cigarette. They watched him get nearer. Paul, the last punt return worked, so we decided to try it again.
A low punt, a line drive that hits on the 40, takes a big bounce, and then another. Alonzo Taylor scoops it up at the 35, and he has nowhere to go. Flags everywhere. Could be a clip.
Paul, could be. Hindu drilled a guy dead in the back, the worst clip I've ever seen. Silo, I started to break his neck. Neely, I stopped you, remember? Poor guy came to the sideline crying. Silo, poor guy. If I saw him now, I'd remind him of that clip.
And so it comes down to this, folks. The Spartans have the ball at their own 19, 81 yards to go, with 1 minute and 40 seconds left on the clock. Down 31 to 28. Renshaw has 2 timeouts and no passing game.
Paul, couldn't pass with a broken hand.
The entire Spartan team is huddled together on the sideline, and it looks like they're having a prayer.
Mal was walking up the steps, slowly, with none of his customary purpose and banter. Nat stopped the tape, and the bleachers were still. Boys, Mal said softly. Coach is gone. Rabbit materialized from the shadows and loped down the track. They watched as he disappeared behind the scoreboard. And a few seconds later, the bank of lights on the southwest pole went off. Rakefield was dark. Most of the Spartans sitting quietly in the bleachers did not know Messina without Eddie Rake. And for the older ones who were very young when he arrived as an unknown and untested 28-year-old football coach, his influence on the town was so overpowering that it was easy to assume he'd always been there. After all, Messina as a town didn't matter before Rake. It wasn't on the map. The vigil was over. The lights were off. Though they had been waiting on his impending death, Mal's message hit them hard. Each of the Spartans withdrew to his own memories for a few moments. Silo set his beer bottle down and began tapping both temples with his fingers. Paul Curry rested his elbows on his knees and stared at the field, at a spot somewhere around the 50-yard line where his coach would storm and fuss, and when a game was tight, no one would get near him. Neely could see Rake in the hospital room, green Messina cap in hand, talking softly to his ex-All-American, concerned about his knee and his future, and trying to apologize. Nat Sawyer bit his lip as his eyes began to moisten. Eddie Rake meant much more to him after his football days. Thank God it was dark, Nat thought to himself. But he knew there were other tears. Somewhere across the little valley, from the direction of the town, came the soft chimes of church bells. Messina was getting the news that it dreaded most. Blanchard Teague spoke first. I really want to finish this game. We've been waiting for 15 years. Paul, we ran flood right. Alonzo got 6 or 7 and made it out of bounds. Silo, would have scored, but Vetrano missed a block on a linebacker. I told him I'd castrate him in the locker room if he missed another one. Paul, they had everybody at the line. I kept asking Neely if he could throw anything, even a little jump pass over the middle, anything to loosen up their secondary. Neely, I could barely grip the ball. Paul, second down, we swept left. Neely, no, second down, we sent three wide and deep. I dropped back to pass, then tucked it and ran. Got 16 yards, but couldn't get out of bounds. Devon Bond hit me again, I thought I was dead. John Couch, I remember that, but he was slow getting up too. Neely, I wasn't worried about him. Paul, ball was on the 40 about a minute to go. Didn't we sweep again? Nat, to the left, almost to first down, and Alonzo got out of bounds, right in front of our bench. Neely, then we tried the option pass again, and Alonzo threw it away, almost got it picked off. Nat, it was picked off, but the safety had 1 foot over the line. Silo, that's when I told you no more passes from Alonzo. John Couch, what was it like in the huddle? Silo, pretty tense, but when Neely said shut up, we shut up. He kept telling us we were sticking it down their throats, that we were going to win, and, as always, we believed him. Nat, the ball was on the 50 with 50 seconds to go. Neely, I called a screen pass, and it worked beautifully. The pass rush was ferocious, and I managed to shovel the ball to Alonzo with my left hand. Nat, it was beautiful. He got hit in the backfield, broke away, and suddenly had a wall of blockers. Silo, that's when I got Bond. Caught that sumbitch fighting off one block and not looking. Buried my helmet in his left side and they carried him off. Neely, that probably won the game. Blanchard, the place was a madhouse. 35,000 people screaming like idiots, but we still heard the hit you put on Bond. Silo, it was legal. I preferred the ones that were not legal, but it was a bad time for a penalty. Paul, Alonzo picked up 20. The clock stopped with the injury, so we had some time. Neely called 3 plays. Neely, I didn't want to risk an interception or fumble, and the only way to spread the defense was to send the receivers wide and go from the shotgun. On first down, I scrambled for 10.